The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. Please keep your arms and legs inside the car at all times.
This is your final warning.
Now, here's your host, Mr. Thrill Ride himself, Eric Metaxas.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the Eric Metaxas Show. This is what we like to call Hour 2. We are legally obliged, I've said this before, to call it Hour 2 because technically it comes after Hour 1. But it's perfectly possible for you to listen to Hour 2 first, in which case we still legally have to call it Hour 2. But you know different. Okay, we're talking to John Zmirak. We like to call him Big Bad John Zmirak. If you're watching on video, you can see that he's a big, bad, nasty dude, and he's our friend, but he's our friend. So John Zmirak, what should we talk about in Hour 2?
Well, in the piece that we were discussing before at stream.org, that short of a great awakening, America is either going to split or something worse. You know, either the pagans are going to convert the Christians are going to convert the pagans, or the whole place is going to tear apart like Yugoslavia.
Well, let me ask you, though, we still are a nation of laws. So the question is, if we have the power to enforce our laws, doesn't it seem that we can hold things together? And I'll give you an example. Like, for example, if Trump were to win overwhelmingly in the fall, if we were to get the House back, wouldn't we be able to hold things together and to help people see the truth? I mean, because I think we're living in such strange times that I guess I'm just guessing that there are enough people that haven't yet really fully understood what's at stake, and that because of the crises through which we're living, they have an opportunity through programs like this and other things to begin to see some of the things that they've never been forced to see before.
Yeah, that is the best case scenario, of course, is Trump winning and taking the House and appointing actual constitutionalists to the Supreme Court instead of left-wing activists who went to law school. Yeah, that would be wonderful. What if, God forbid, he loses and he takes and the Democrats keep the House, maybe take the Senate and stuff the Supreme Court? That's equally likely.
You're bringing up my favorite conspiracy theory, which I invented. I think that Biden, because of this very plausible accusation of sexual assault, will eventually be pushed out by the Democratic leaders. The question then, as Buckley would say, the question becomes, who will replace him? Now, it seems to me that Hillary Clinton has been waiting since she was in the womb for this moment to leap out and to seize control. America will turn its lonely eyes to Hillary and say, oh, please, please, will you save us from 4 more years of prosperity and good leadership and safety and common sense, because we can't bear it anymore. Will you save us? I think she would rise to the occasion. My theory, I put it out on Twitter, is that she will have to pick a black female VP. And I suggested Rachel Dolezal is a possibility. RuPaul is a possibility.
Yeah.
And then it's a toss up in my mind between Michelle Obama and Betty White, the actress.
Right. Well, in reality, I think the Democrats are done with Hillary. And I think they've been clearly, look, if you want to know what the DNC thinks, look what the mainstream media does, because they're following their talking points. They're getting their orders every morning, probably by an old fax machine, one of those fax machines that puts out scroll paper rather than plain paper. And it's just rolling out like a parchment, the orders from the DNC each day. And no, I'm not kidding. I think something like that is in fact happening. And I think the Democrats have not yet decided to dump Biden. When they do, that very day, media will suddenly discover Tara Reid's allegations are credible. Overnight, something will happen, something will click. And what Americans won't know is that the facts rolled in oh, now listen to Tara Reid. And I think the Democrats would love to get Biden out of the way and put Andrew Cuomo in his place. And
I think if Larry King died, for example, that would be, you know, that could goose the news in the direction of playing the clip from his old show.
Which is, by the way, you know, Google Archives removed that clip. It vanished. People started sharing it on social media and Google purged it from his archives.
You're kidding.
Try to find it.
You're kidding.
No. Just the way Facebook and Google have announced and YouTube have announced that no video skeptical of the World Health Organization can be shown. Just the way No Safe Spaces was censored. The movie Hoax that you and I talked about a few weeks ago was censored. They're becoming increasingly open about the suspension of the Constitution that they have used this virus Reichstag fire to justify, and we have to start screaming about it before it's too late.
Well, this is a good opportunity to remind my viewers and my listeners that we, well, if you're already a viewer, you know that most of these programs are put on YouTube on the Eric Metaxas Show channel, not just Eric Metaxas, but Eric Metaxas Show. And I want to ask you, please share them, folks. We really are at a point where we have to use what platforms we have. You know, I'm not on national TV, but that's really up to you. If you share these videos that you like, you share as many as you like, please share them so that others would hear what we're talking about. You know that the mainstream media and a lot of conservative media just doesn't cover some of these kinds of things. What we're talking about right now, what we've been talking about is one of those things. John, I just to go back, because it's a little bit fun and I need a little entertainment in the midst of the misery. You say you think everybody's done with Hillary. I agree, but I still think she's not done. And I think that as long as she's not done, she will find a way to insert herself, because what she will say is, at this late date, nobody is qualified and trusted enough. I'm the most qualified person ever to run for president. Everyone knows that. Obama will get behind me. Everyone will get behind me. And by the way, I will pick a black female vice presidential candidate. It'll be an historic ticket. Two women. How can it go wrong? It will go wrong. But I somehow see her waiting in the wings, because I don't know who else would be tapped. Do you?
I believe Andrew Cuomo. I think the fact is the media has been lionizing him and presenting him as an alternative president, airing his daily briefings to compete with Trump's, setting him up as the responsible figure who warned us all in time, when in fact he was blowing off the virus after Trump was taking it seriously. So I think Andrew Cuomo is their dream candidate. They desperately wanted Mario Cuomo to run. For some reason, Mario wouldn't. I suspect there was some FBI files that might have been leaked if he had done that. I strongly suspect that there was some nefarious background in the Cuomo family that prevented that. But that's long ago now. This is the next generation. Now it's not Don Corleone. It's Fredo. And in this case, Michael Corleone. Andrew is the Michael wants to be.
Yeah, I don't think of Chris Cuomo as Fredo. I think of Michael. I prefer Chris Cuomo to Andrew Cuomo, but that's another story. Look, you're right. Right now, but this is the way things work. People are like it's you know, he's the hot guy, but that always vanishes. I mean, Beto O'Rourke was the hot guy. You've got to think long term. Something will happen to disqualify Cuomo, or Hillary Clinton will put out some dirt on Cuomo. I'm sure that there's a lot. You know, it just seems to me that even though basically I think you're right, let's at least focus on this for the remaining minute here. We really do think that Biden will be pushed out, that somehow because of this allegation, it's just too ugly. And he has been so, I mean, if he were doing really well, somehow they would push it aside, but he's not.
Right.
And they want to beat Trump.
They would like a conscious, functional human being as their candidate, which is often the aspiration of major political parties.
Yes. So it's kind of, it is sad though, when you see him on these clips. I don't think it's a dementia issue. I just think that Joe Biden is old and he's just not he just isn't able to put it together the way he was able to. We're going to go to break, folks. More with John Zmirak later in the program, the Alliance Defending Freedom. Don't go away.
Use this gospel for protection. It's a hard road to heaven. We call on your blessings. In the Father, we put our faith. King of the kingdom, our demons are trembling. Holy angels defending. In the Father, we put our faith.
Hey, folks, welcome back. We are talking, yes, we are talking to John the Situation Zmirak. You probably remember him from the Jersey Shore. He's out of prison, and he is my guest on today's program. John the Situation, how you doing?
I'm good, thanks, Eric. I wanted to talk about a piece I've got at stream.org. Let me look up the title. The Virus, Nature's Revenge or God's Punishment for Hubris. Hubris is something which you as a Greek would know a lot about. It's a, you know, when you grow a really huge mustache, that is an example of hubris.
Right.
It's when you overreach. When you try to do something beyond you, and as a result, the gods send nemesis to smack you down. Okay.
Right.
Napoleon, hubris. Hitler, hubris.
Right.
This virus. Pope Francis has talked about this might be, you know, nature punishing us for our abuse of the environment. And he almost sounds like some pagan, neo-pagan environmentalist talking about Gaia.
Right.
And he's surrounded by support by advisors who believe in Gaia. I have a different theory. Steve Mosher of the Population Research Institute, the guy who broke the story to the world about the Chinese one-child policy back in the 80s that killed 400 million unborn children against their parents' will. Steve Mosher, China expert, has a new book, The Bully of Asia, about China, the rise of China, how China's arming faster than Hitler did in the 1930s, all aimed at the United States. This virus was created in a lab, not intentionally as a bioweapon. It was created as part of a research program where these scientists thought it was a good idea to make more and more dangerous viruses, to tinker with the DNA of the viruses, to make them super contagious to human beings and super deadly. Why? So that they could come up with maybe vaccines and antidotes and cures to the virus. But they were it wasn't just China. The United States was doing this till 2017 under the direction of Dr. Anthony Fauci.
This is called biological warfare. And I guess it becomes an ethical question. In other words, if it's okay to develop neutron and atom bombs, hydrogen bombs, why is it unethical to develop biological weapons?
It's not that it's unethical. It's that it's unthinkably stupid. Why create viruses that might never evolve in nature so that you could cure them and then have them in facilities where you're dependent on nobody making a mistake, nobody oversleeping, nobody forgetting to update the software. I mean, this makes our nuclear missiles on a hair trigger look safe by comparison.
Right.
Okay. But we were doing it till 2017 under Fauci's direction. Then Fauci decided it wasn't safe, but the U.S. let the Chinese keep doing it, and their labs weren't safe. Our diplomats, last fall, we're sending cables to the U.S. saying, you know, these labs in Wuhan, they don't have the proper safety procedures. We think this is dangerous. Sure enough, the virus gets out, probably from a scientist in Wuhan, China. China denies it. When they realize that it's real, that it can go from person to person, they lie about it to the World Health Organization, but they lock down the province of Wuhan to any travel inside of China. But they let people keep flying out of Wuhan all around the world. That sounds to me like biological warfare, okay? And we should be treating China as if it had launched a Pearl Harbor-style attack.
We did. We talked about this last week on the program with a few of our guests. Diana West said that the man, the French scientist who discovered the HIV virus, he gave an interview, and it exists out there. I think gatesofviennablog.com or something had a great translation blog of it. where he says without question that this Wuhan virus, this COVID-19 virus, is definitely something created in a lab. There's no way that it just occurred. So we can talk about whether it was created with nefarious intent.
I don't think it was, Eric. I don't think it was. This is an example of crazy technological hubris. Just the way our scientists spent the 50s and 60s, 70s and 80s creating enough nuclear weapons to destroy the human species 500 times over, biologists are creating superviruses as problems that they can solve, like chess problems. Oh, let's make a virus which would kill the entire world, and then let's see if we can cure it, because I'll win a Nobel Prize. That's what's going on.
Okay, but let me ask you, it seems to me more plausible, the Chinese government being the Chinese government, that their thinking was that they could create a virus to which only they had the vaccine or the antidote, and so maybe that would be the ultimate biological warfare weapon.
Possible. But we were doing the same thing till 3 years ago. So it's possible they were doing it as a weapon. It's possible we were doing it as a weapon. It's possible that we were all just doing it as misguided, insane scientific hubris. It doesn't really matter. There's no excuse for doing it.
But they didn't just do it, John. They did it. It escaped.
Yeah.
They were not forthcoming or transparent about it. They allowed people from Wuhan to fly outside of China. It seems to me that your article at stream.org saying that this is Red China's Pearl Harbor becomes true. In other words, that this ends up being an act of war because of what they did after it escaped.
That's right. And then, but the war continues. You have the Atlantic Monthly saying, maybe we need to emulate China in censorship of the internet. Maybe, we need an authoritarian government because it will be better at containing viruses.
Now, who wrote that at the Atlantic? Because you tweeted it this morning, I think. Who wrote that?
I did. I'd have to get off and.
Somebody tweeted it. Well, look. Here's the point. We know that our cultural elites in America are lost. They're fools. They don't understand any of this stuff. But my question is, what do we do about it? Nikki Haley, who is almost certainly running for president in 2024, she has put out some very, very strong, I think, legislation to counter China. I don't remember if it was legislation or if it was
Senator Hawley is doing that. Representative Massey, I believe, is doing that. The thing is, we have to look at what our elites are saying. They're using the Chinese virus as a pretext for saying we need an authoritarian system a lot more like China's. They're repeating Chinese Communist Party talking points. Their networks are partly owned by Communist China. Joe Biden's son made a $1 billion deal with the Bank of Communist China after flying there on Air Force Two. If he's still the nominee, the Trump administration is going to have to use that pinata and beat it till the last piece of candy falls out of it. Because this is the Reichstag fire election, where instead of the National Socialist Party, the Communist Party of China is fundamentally what Trump has to run against, because it is what he is running against. These people are collaborators with the Chinese government attacked the world. And it sounds xenophobic and terrible to say that. Well, you know what? If you have to, every time you criticize the Chinese government, praise Taiwan, praise Singapore, praise other Asian countries that are not evil totalitarian systems.
Praise everyone who lives in Hong Kong. Listen,
concentration camps.
The time is past. There's a certain time at a war when we no longer should even tolerate the idea that talking about China is racist, because we are obviously never talking about the Chinese people. They are prisoners. Right. We're talking about the Chinese government. There are over 100 million serious Christians in China who are being persecuted by their own government. We have a class in this country that has allied themselves tremendously foolishly with China. It's obvious that the New York Times would believe China before they would believe the Trump administration. It's obvious that the Atlantic is parroting parroting these same ideas. That is the horror, is that we have people inside our system who are working with our worst enemies.
Yep, it's shocking, and we have to realize it. And the Trump campaign has to press it home and take it seriously. And God willing, he gets reelected. And the next thing we need to do is build up conservative media. We need to have a streaming service that competes with Netflix and Amazon that is not censored by the left. We need conservative comedy shows. We need more colleges like the King's College in New York that resist this narrative and offer solid education. We need more people being homeschooled. And we need to really rally around our Second Amendment rights, because without a Second Amendment, there's no First Amendment. Eric, the next book I'm writing is on the roots of the Second Amendment in the struggle of Protestants for religious liberty, especially in England and in America. How the Second Amendment comes straight out of the battle for religious liberty for Christians, and the next battle for religious liberty for Christians will hinge on that.
I hope you can write it quickly, John, because I have other books that I'm going to insist that you write, other books that are at least equally important to what sounds like a very, very important book. We're out of time. John Zmierak, John the Situation Zmierak, I should say. I had hoped to bring up the subject of Snooki. We'll have to save that for another time. We will talk to you either later this week or next week. My friend, thank you for being
thank
our
you.
Guest.
God bless.
Christian bestselling author and speaker Richard E. Simmons does not shy away from the big questions of life. His latest book is called Reflections on the Existence of God, and it tackles the biggest question of all, does God exist? I've read this book, and I got to tell you, I'm a little biased, but you can imagine that I like it a lot, because Simmons offers insights for those grappling with life's biggest questions. Where do we find meaning in life? Who determines what is evil? Can we be moral without God? Does God even exist? Former White House aide Wallace Henley says, I've taught apologetics for many years and I've read every scholar mentioned in this book. Of all the books on apologetics, Simmons is the best I have ever read. This book is easy to read because it's divided into a series of brief essays, perfect for a devotional or discussion with a friend. I highly recommend that you add a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God to your pandemic reading list. Simmons asks questions that speak directly to one of the most important things you possess, your worldview. Folks, you know how important this is to me. Your worldview is going to impact the way you live your life for better or for worse. If you want to challenge yourself to spiritual and intellectual growth, and I hope you do, then be willing to ask yourself life's toughest questions. Dive in today by picking up a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God right now. Go to existenceofgodbook.com. That's existenceofgodbook.com. Folks, welcome to the program. As promised, we were going to talk to somebody from the Alliance Defending Freedom. Oh, no, not just somebody, not just a senior counsel, as we usually do. The president, Michael Ferris, is with us. Mr. Ferris, welcome to this program.
Eric, thank you for having me on the program today.
Look, we are just red hot with passion for what you all do at ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. I hope folks will go to the website, Alliance Defending Freedom. But you in particular are not only the president, but you are somebody who previously led a homeschool organization. And today we're going to talk about what is happening, what Harvard is proposing. It's gruesome. We've been talking about it with our previous guest, John Zmierak. So please tell us what you did before ADF.
I was the founder of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association in 1983, led that organization for 33 years, and homeschooled our own kids. We have 10 children and all homeschooled all the way through. The last two are still in college, both getting PhDs in science, from one from Michigan State in nuclear physics, the other in Notre Dame in biomedical research. So
I want to make sure. Okay. I want to make sure that your audio is sufficiently up. So Engineer James, please make sure that that's the case. Michael Ferris, I say, and you wouldn't know this, but I say often that we didn't homeschool our kid, but I am such a big fan of homeschooling because everywhere I go around the country, whenever I meet homeschooled kids, they impress me so much. I keep saying they're going to take over the world. They're the hope of the American future because they tend to be so much better educated than others. I don't care what others we're talking about, but I have been really staggered by how impressive most homeschool kids seem to me. And so what is being threatened right now at Harvard? John Zmierich spoke about it, but from your point of view at ADF, what is happening?
Well, there is a meeting, an event planned in June that culminates a long campaign against homeschooling. Elizabeth Barthlet, there at Harvard, a law professor, wrote a law review article in Arizona State Law Review arguing that homeschooling should be presumptively banned. That article was summarized and put out to all the Harvard alumni community, got a lot of play nationally, arguing that the same thesis in a more succinct form. Homeschooling should be banned. The reason 90% of the homeschoolers are evangelical Christians, she says.
How many?
Well, she claims 90%. It's probably more like 2/3 of the homeschoolers are evangelical Christians or conservative Catholics. And there's another third that are homeschooling essentially for secular academic reasons. And the community gets along well. But nonetheless, her basic point was she doesn't like the philosophy that's being taught in these homeschooling programs. And so it should be banned because of the philosophical reasoning that the kids are learning.
Okay, I'm just guessing that she's vaguely culturally Marxist and that everything that we believe she finds offensive. The problem, of course, Michael Ferris, is that she's wrong. She's wrong on two counts. Even if what we believe and want to teach our kids is wrong, we have the right as parents in America to teach our kids whatever we like. So that is one issue. And we have to be really clear that if I want to teach my daughter that the Greek ethnicity is better than all other ethnicities, I have that right as her parent. The government has no right to tell me what to teach my kids, within reason, of course. But the issue here that I think is making them behave this way is they're frightened to death about what I mentioned earlier, that these kids that are being educated, they are going to fill the country with brilliant leadership that understands the Constitution and understands the biblical worldview. And that is deeply troubling to people who've been working for a century to eradicate what we think.
Well, that's exactly right. Also taught constitutional law, was the president of Patrick Henry College, which is dominated by homeschoolers. Five of my former students I personally taught four have clerked for the Supreme Court of the United States, and a fifth is the Solicitor General of West Virginia right now. All homeschool kids, all conservative, all Christians. One of her charges is that it's a dominantly patriarchal, we don't want to teach the girls anything. Well, of those five that I mentioned, four of those are young women, three clerk for the Supreme Court, one's the Solicitor General of West Virginia. We are creating an opportunity for kids to be at their very best and to be deeply involved in our society in leadership capacities. That's exactly what they're afraid of. Exactly. You're right.
It's an amazing thing, you know, that we have to fight for what is true and right. I think I grew up naively thinking that, it's rare that you really have to fight. But it seems that we're living in a time now when the most basic things are being challenged, things that we could effectively take for granted for two centuries plus are being challenged. This woman whom you mentioned, what is her particular animus? In other words, does she have a history of hating Christians? What is her thing?
I don't know what her background reasoning is. And she's not the only one by any stretch of the imagination. Catherine Ross at George Washington Law School has written a similar thesis before.
Actually, let me ask you about that when we come back. We're going to go to a break. Folks, we're going to be right back with the president of the Alliance Defending Freedom, Michael Ferris. Go to the Alliance Defending Freedom website. We'll be right back. Hey there, folks. We're talking to the president of the Alliance Defending Freedom. They're our friends. We hope you'll go to their website, Alliance Defending Freedom. Michael Ferris, you were just referring to somebody at Georgetown who thinks similarly to this woman who's put forth, who wrote the article in the Phoenix Law Review.
Yeah, her name's Catherine Ross. She teaches law at George Washington Law School, and she has made a similar argument. She actually argued that we should not be tolerant of people who we deem to be intolerant.
Right.
And she labels Christians.
This is very old. I mean, this is as old as the hills, isn't it? But here we are. Okay. She's being explicit.
Yeah. And so along with her and the dean at Northwestern Law School takes a very similar position, Kimberly Urocco. So there is a cadre of law professors, most of them happen to be women, who made these arguments, who are arguing that all, in fact, Martha Finneman from Emory has argued that all private education in America should be stopped because we're not able to teach them the kind of cultural mandates that we think should come through the public school system.
And we're not able to teach them the cultural what? I'm sorry?
Mandates.
The
norms that they want us to.
Yeah. Well, this gets to the very heart of everything. We have to go down to the foundations of everything and talk about what is education? What is truth? What is the role of the state? What is the role of the family? What are the rights of the family? And it's an extraordinary thing because we have generations now of people like these whom you're citing that have an utterly different view than the founders and than most Americans in the nearly 2.5 centuries of our existence. They really do believe what the Chinese government and what other communistic or totalitarian governments believe, that the state has every right to our children and to indoctrinate them as they see fit. We have a different view. And at this point, obviously, we have to fight, which is why I'm so glad you and the Alliance Defending Freedom exist, because I cannot imagine where we would be, frankly, if you didn't.
Well, I appreciate that. And we are dedicated to continuing to keep the doors open for freedom in this country. But there is a historical example that's similar to what these professors are arguing. It was in Oregon in the 1920s when the Scottish Rite Masons and the Ku Klux Klan got a ballot initiative through banning all private schools. That case went to the Supreme Court of the United States, the Pierce versus Society of Sisters, and the Supreme Court of the United States said, no, in our nation, you cannot make an orthodoxy of anything. And the government schools are not entitled to have sole dominance over kids. Parents have a prior right to choose another form of education for their kids. And so these professors are standing in the shoes of the Ku Klux Klan of the 1920s, trying to say, we want to dominate every child in this country with the philosophy we think is right. And we thought we settled this once and for all. Internationally, it was settled in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, when it says parents have a prior right to choose the kind of education for their children that they wish. And that was in response to Nazi Germany. Nazi Germany, Ku Klux Klan, these professors are all arguing essentially the same things.
And let's be clear, we're not being coy. This is not a coincidence. The reason they're arguing essentially the same things is because fundamentally they believe the same things. They don't believe in the biblical view. They don't believe in the founders' view of freedom. They have to use force and they have to work in the system to subvert the system. That's what they're trying to do. And if we do nothing, and if people don't, for example, and I'm going to just, be clear, write a check to the Alliance Defending Freedom. If we don't fight now, it is over, because these people, their whole lives depend on putting forth this idea. And I really think we've become so complacent in America that we think everything's sort of fine. When I hear stories like this, this is a grotesque misunderstanding of everything most Americans ought to be believe in. And it's because we haven't been taught these things very much in the public schools. There's the irony, right? If we had been taught these things in the public schools for 40 years, we would probably not even need homeschooling, but we need homeschooling because the public schools have been taken over by, you know, Howard Zinn's disciples.
Exactly right. My dad passed away now, but was a elementary principal for all of his adult life. And he believed the same things that we believe now. He's a solid Christian believer. And he saw the schools being taken over. And it really troubled him that the national movements could come in with a different philosophy. And the people in the community just didn't believe it. But the communities, the good people in the communities, the good teachers, the good principals, got overtaken by a philosophy that said, forget about America's past, forget about the principle that I may disagree with everything you say, but I'll defend to the death your right to say it. That principle has been set aside in favor of the new cultural Marxism that you so well identified.
Well, it's interesting because if you really believe in freedom and in truth, then you're okay with freedom because you believe that the cream will rise to the top, the best ideas will win, the free market and so on and so forth will produce good things if you have a virtuous citizenry. Mm-hmm. Those things break down if the citizenry no longer talks about virtue, no longer teaches virtue. And that's kind of where we are today. People are, they're afraid of freedom. If anything, they want to shut it down. It's only a threat to them. I'm just so grateful to you and to ADF. Now, is this something that you think may go to the Supreme Court? What do you think is going to happen with this proposal that Harvard is likely to put out?
Well, it has to turn itself into law at some point in time.
And you don't think it will in state legislatures?
Well, they're playing a long game. And yes, they will make attempts to introduce this into legislatures. A similar bill was introduced a couple of years ago in Virginia to curtail homeschooling. We got that killed quickly through the Homeschool Legal Defense Association and other groups that were working on that at the time. And so being ever vigilant about this issue is going to be necessary because they're training the next generation of lawyers, judges,
right,
legislators.
Right.
And so we need to fight their long game with our long game, their short game with our short game.
Well, Michael Ferris, I just want to say on behalf of almost all of my listeners, thank you from the bottom of our hearts for what you do, for what ADF does. I want to encourage people again, go to the Alliance Defending Freedom website, check them out. Please support them. They're the last line of defense in something that is now a war. Michael Ferris, thank you so much.
And there's so much more. Live alone in a paradise that makes me think of two. Love lost.
Hey, folks, we're almost done with the show. Albin, you've got a great letter you want to read from a listener. Please go ahead.
Right. You debated David French at the Q conference, right? So this listener, Jody from Chattahoochee Hills in Georgia, said, I spent the $99 to hear you debate David French at Q. And I wanted to say, bravo, you did a great job. And just wanted to thank you for your courage and your clarity. The sense of moral superiority that David projected both alarmed and saddened me. I'm dealing with hatred from my only non-Christian sibling because of my support for the president. Truly surreal. Please keep up the great work, praying for your strength and for your protection, for you and your family. Many thanks. P.S. Your F-bomb did not offend me. Explain, Eric.
Oh, she's referring to at some point, I was trying to describe the evil of socialism. And I said, it's like you need a bumper sticker that says something like socialism Fs, you know, EFFS, Fs the poor. It is so vile. We need to put the message out there that socialism harms the poor, kills the poor, You know, blank, blank, blank's the poor, you know, like with cartoon, you know, cursing or something like that. Socialism F's the poor was as good as I could come up with. But I thought to myself, we need to get that message out, because when we're dancing around and saying, oh, I don't like Trump, and he's had the guts to say this will never be a socialist country.
Yeah.
Nobody on the Democratic side has pushed back hard against socialism, and it's clear where they're going. And if you really care about the poor, I mean, if you not just talk about it, but if you really care about it, you know, socialism is the enemy of the poor. Socialism will harm them horribly if you actually care about them. And
that's right. And Christians should care about the poor, number one.
Everyone should care about the poor.
Yeah. And Eric, I think for you with your parents, and I have a similar background with my mother who escaped communist Cuba and had, you know, their whole family livelihood confiscated. You've sort of been embedded and imbued with these kind of radioactive isotopes against this stuff. So when you smell it, when you get a sniff of it, it's in your DNA to react because of what your parents came through. And yeah, I don't think people understand that.
My father, you know, saw the communists try to take over Greece. It was gruesome, the Civil War. He was there when this happened. My mother was in Germany when it was taken over by the Soviets, and she saw the indoctrination. It's why she escaped at age 17. So a lot of these woke evangelicals, they need to actually wake up and understand you're dealing with evil and you're playing games. You have no idea how wicked this stuff is. And if it takes me to be a jughead to talk about it, I'm happy to talk about it. Before we go, by the way, folks, we want to remind you, nosafespaces.com. Just put in save 25, nosafespaces.com. You kind of have to watch it and put in save 25, please. And of course, please support our sponsors. They're going through a tough time. We're going through a tough time. Honorboundcoffee.com. Every penny of their profits goes to help military families. Honorboundcoffee.com. I can't say enough about them. They're the best. The coffee is amazing. Every penny of their profits goes to help military families. Go to honorboundcoffee.com. And of course, our friend Mike Lindell, an American hero and an outspoken Christian. We played that tape. We'll play it again. If you get anything from MyPillow, and I hope you do, please put in our code Eric or Metaxas. You get a very big discount. We have a great deal with Mike Lindell, MyPillow.com. We'll catch you tomorrow with more amazing guests. If you hear the sirens, I think they're coming for me. But if not, I'll see you tomorrow. Just